Facebook.com.
Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Wednesday, October 31st edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so. We're going over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me for this hump day edition of the show. Two guests will join me. The first one, professional handicapper Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com. The second, Wes Reynolds, who you know from Twitter, at Wes Reynolds, and the number one. Hoping everything sounds okay on today's show. My wife and I moved yesterday. Yes, it was a shit show. Yes, it was a nightmare. Yes, I'm never moving again. But in a different office here, so hopefully everything sounds all right. Also, not doing the show on Hardwire today, doing it on Wi-Fi. So again, hopefully everything comes across well for you. As I get some data points here with the show, figure out what equipment works best for me in this new office and all that type of thing. But the show must go on, as they say in the world of show business, and go on we will. Over at bangthebook.com, where we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information, lots and lots of things for you to check out here for week 10 of the college football season and also week 9 of the NFL season. Opening line reports were posted earlier in the week. College football power ratings went up early in the week. Also, we'll have NFL power ratings either tonight or tomorrow. College football situational betting tips. Lots of NBA, NHL. We'll have NASCAR here today. Golf preview is written up on Monday. So we got you fully covered for everything that's going on. Had a very good preview for the Paris Masters, the tennis event that's going on here this week. We'll have UFC. I think that's coming up here in this week as well. Fully covered over at bangthebook.com. And don't forget, they have you covered over at DSI Sportsbook as well with that Bang100 promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook over there at BetDSI, where it's only a game until you bet it. Two guests here on the program today. The first one, professional handicapper Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com. Brian, how's it going today, man?
Everything's going great. Didn't have as hectic day as you did, but it's nice when you actually moved in and you get everything at your property. And yeah, luckily I haven't had to do it too many times in my life, but boy, is it a pain in the butt.
Oh, it's horrible. It's so, you know, nothing seems to work out. Nothing goes right. Everything's delayed. Everything's on time. But you know what? Still, it's a new beginning. My wife and I are very happy about it. And, you know, hopefully, like I said, everything sounds okay on today's show. But Brian, I want to start with something a little bit lighthearted today because it's Halloween. So, you know, let's kind of reminisce a little bit. What was your favorite Halloween costume that you had growing up?
Well, when I was growing up, we didn't have a whole lot of money. So my mom would go to the local, basically it'd be like a Target. And back then they didn't have all these fancy masks and everything. And they had like a little kid's costume that you would buy. It was plastic and they'd give you a plastic mask that you had a strap on it. And I don't know, it's a little before your time, but I was a big fan of the banana splits, which was a live. People would dress up in costumes and they played videos and cartoons or whatever. And one of the animals was Bingo. He was a monkey. And I think he was a monkey. Looked like a monkey to me. I don't know. Who the hell knows? But anyway, that was my costume one year. And my mother-in-law, who is obviously older than I am, knows the show. And she just cracks up every time she thinks of me dressed up in a Bingo costume.
Well, there you go. And, you know, hey, you're never too old to enjoy Halloween. So hopefully, I don't know if you're passing out candy or just eating candy. Certainly a good day for all that type of thing. So, Brian, let's chat a little bit of college football here. And let's go to Thursday night in the MAC game, 309-310, Ohio versus Western Michigan. Seeing some Ohio money hit the board here over the last couple of days. And obviously, I was pretty much off the grid yesterday. So didn't really get too many chances to look at the odds screen except for doing the show. But all of a sudden here, I see Ohio now anywhere from a 2 to a 3 point favorite for this road trip to Kalamazoo.
Yeah, what a difference a week makes for Western Michigan. Last week against Toledo, once again for the second straight week, money came in on Toledo. I had Western Michigan in that game and was never in it. Western Michigan loses that game 51-24. Successful plays was much closer, 53% to 49%. But Toledo for 2 weeks in a row. The first week it didn't work out for those late money bettors. Last week it did. And Toledo really looked good, especially on the line of play as Western Michigan lose the sack battle 5-0 in that game. And excuse me, up until that point, Toledo hadn't done anything on the lines. But the last 2 weeks they've had five sacks each week. So they're getting a little bit healthier. Everything's working out better for Toledo. And that may be a team you want to get ahead of the market on, because I saw this week it's a little bit inflated in the game as we're taping today on Wednesday. Toledo's taking a lot of money again this week. So there's a lot of people think the old Toledo's back, but it made Western Michigan look bad last week. And I had Western coming in last week as a look ahead as a two-point favorite here. Ohio's one of those teams that were expected to win that division coming into the season. Struggled a little bit out of the gate, but now they're playing much better. Even in the loss to Northern Illinois, they covered that game. So they've won 4 out of 5 with that close loss to Northern Illinois. What's really been good for the Ohio Bobcats is the way the offense has played the last 2 weeks against Bowling Green and Ball State. Obviously not very good teams, but they had a 67% offensive success rate against Bowling Green and a 75% offense success rate against Ball State last week. And those are like Alabama type of numbers. Your usual number is about 41.6. So these guys are just having their way. The last 2 weeks they've been fine-tuned, and they got that full week off after playing Ball State last Thursday. And once again, Western Michigan played Toledo last Thursday. So they're both on equal terms when it comes to that. But I could see why the money would be coming in on Ohio. They're finally starting to click. And then Western Michigan just did not look good last week against Toledo. Like I said, I made it originally Western Michigan too, but I could see the line going towards Ohio there. I was hoping to catch a better number, but it didn't come out that way. I opened it pick 'em, and now I'm seeing anywhere from 2 to 2.5 on Ohio U.
Well, and, you know, this is a game, even if you don't have money on it, and I don't think I'm going to have money on this one, because Western Michigan here, without John Wasink, their starting quarterback, out for the year once again, now they're going the freshman route here with Caleb Ellaby, who played really well last week, 23 of 28, 293 yards, couple touchdowns, but that wasn't a blowout. Toledo's defense kind of playing that soft coverage type of thing. And also Ellaby, you know, showing some signs of being a freshman there, taking 5 sacks in that game. So you do kind of wonder here for Western how this offense looks. However, I think going forward, Tim Lester played the quarterback position, now a head coach there at Western Michigan. I think with a young guy that he recruited into the system here, and he did go out to Missouri and get this player in Ellaby, you know, must think that he's a good fit for what he wants to do schematically. So maybe Western Michigan in a bit of a tricky spot this week against Ohio. You know, Ohio's always consistent, always right there. But I think Western Michigan, maybe you give this kid a week or two, I think maybe the arrow comes back up on the Broncos here for their last couple of games.
Yeah, I could agree to that. In fact, the Western has got a bye coming up next week before they face Ball State and Northern Illinois to finish off the conference schedule. My hope here is that Western looks really bad against Ohio here, and everybody gives up on the Broncos. And then with that extra week to prepare that young quarterback coming back against a Ball State team, hopefully we can get a nice number there so we're not laying too much against Ball State. And it'll be a nice way for us to make some money, even though we probably won't have anything going on tonight's game.
Well, again, last week, I know you liked Western Michigan. You talked about them here on the show. One thing that, you know, I think all of us maybe need to do a better job of, and I'm not sure how well you do with this, but I know I don't do nearly well enough with it. Western Michigan's punter was atrocious in that game. Less than a 30-yard average on the 6 punts that he had. And, you know, that's just one of those things. I mean, special teams can really dictate a game. And from a power rating standpoint, you know, I don't really incorporate those too much into my handicap. I don't really look too much at special teams rankings, something like that. It's definitely an omission and an oversight for me. And it played such a big role in that game last week that we talked about that, you know, I kind of had my, you know, come to Jesus moment regarding special teams that, you know, I need to focus on them a lot more as we go forward and to incorporate them.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've got a friend out here, Alf Mosqueda. He's a Canadian, but when he was in high school, he was a punter. So when we'd have our Tuesday meetings, he would always talk about the punters. We kind of giggle and laugh about it because that was his pet peeve. But, yeah, it definitely makes a difference. And when you take a look at Western Michigan's offense this year, they haven't needed the punter too many times, you know, other than Michigan. Last week's game against Toledo scoring 24 was the season low. But they've been able to put up, you know, 35 to 40 points in just about every game. So we haven't really paid much attention to the punter. But, yeah, especially when you've got a young quarterback going that may not be able to sustain drives like the veteran has that came back from last year with a nice quarterback rating. It's something you got to keep in mind. And it's it's interesting when it comes from watching the games. I think that's, you know, you can read a lot of special teams reports and rankings and that kind of thing. But if you watch a game, sometimes you'll watch a team and that kicker is like, it's just amazing to you. I couldn't find another kicker any better than him. And I turned to the wife the other day and I'm watching the NFL games. I says, isn't it nice to sit there and watch a game where you line up for a field goal and you actually think you can make it, as opposed to college where there's a lot of these teams and just they sit there and they depend on their kicker too much and it's too much for these young kids. They're just not that good. And then they blow the game because they put it in the kicker's hands. But in the NFL, for the most part, unless you're a Green Bay kicker a few weeks ago, those things don't happen.
Or unless you're a kicker for the Cleveland Browns, and we'll talk about them here in a few minutes as well. One other college game I want to get to here, Thursday Nighter. This is a very interesting handicap. I think the previous game we talked about, Ohio and Western Michigan, is very interesting as well. Because Ohio, you know, is kind of that front runner here in this conference, even though they haven't won the MAC title in a very long time, they're always very good, always very consistent, and you've got Western with that quarterback change. But this one here, Northern Illinois and Akron, game 3-11, 3-12. Northern Illinois is up to a 6-point favorite for this one here. Very, very, very low total, 37.5. I don't know if I've ever seen a college total that low. Certainly haven't seen one that low in the last couple of years here, but it's probably justified. I mean, Northern Illinois, nice win last week over BYU because of the defense, not because of the offense, which was inept again. Akron, not a great offensive team either. NIU, short week, off a game in altitude. A lot of stuff going on in this game.
Yeah, it definitely has something to take a look back at because you haven't seen totals in this range. But keep in mind, Northern Illinois did have the bye week before going into BYU, so they're probably a little bit more rested than Akron here. I actually played Northern Illinois when it came out at 5.5. I played them at 5.5. And the reason I did was because I'm not a big believer in this Akron team. And, you know, Northern Illinois, you talked about the low scoring and the offense. Believe me, the offense hasn't scored more than 24 points in any game this season in regulation. But you go back defensively, and every game they've played very well. They lost the opener 33-7 to Iowa. But ever since then, you look back at some of the teams they played. Utah, they held Utah to 17 points. Florida State, they lose that game 37-19. Really strange game that they had a +4 turnover margin and still get beat badly. But that was the first of three straight games, and I believe we talked about it at the time that it may have been one of those situations where they just punt that game and look at conference situation, and they'd already been 1-0 after beating Central Michigan in that earlier meeting. So I think that's really is what happened because, you know, last week, because they did have that bye before BYU, they could come out and play that game as if it's a normal game as opposed to just punting that one as well. And it actually worked out well for them, 7-6. I talked about 416 is basically what you have for your success rate for the average. In that game, they had 35 against 31. So there was a reason why that game was so low scoring. Neither offense did well. Defenses did fine. But you take a look at the teams that Northern Illinois played. We talked about just a couple of weeks ago, they played Ohio. And Ohio's one of those teams offensively right now, just been on fire. And they held Ohio to a 29% success rate and 21 points. So this is a very good defense in Northern Illinois. And when you take a look at the Akron Zips, there's not much they've done offensively. Even that game, Central Michigan, last week, they only scored 17 points. Going back the entire season, they have yet to have more than 35% success rate against any opponent. And keep in mind, they've played Kent State, and some other teams on that level, Kent State, Central Michigan, and they still can't move the ball against weaker defenses. And we saw last night with Bowling Green put up a ton of points against Kent, but luckily Kent was able to take advantage of one of the worst defenses in college football yesterday and was able to get that win in a high-scoring affair. But, yeah, I want no part of Akron here, but you're right. It does bring pause when you're catching it's up to 6 points now, catching 6 points from a home underdog in a game that's lined at 37.
Well, and I just ran the query here over on the killersports.com database. We have not had an FBS game with a total of 38 or lower since 2016. I believe that was Boston College versus Wake Forest. I'll have to run the query again because I reset it to 2017. The only games we've had here in 2018 with totals that low have been at the FCS ranks. So we have not had an FBS game with a total this low since 2016. Again, this total now down to 37.5. That was Boston College and Wake, November 26th. That was a game that ended 17-14. We also had UConn and Tulane there on November 26th. That was a total of 37.5. That game was 38-13, Tulane with the win in that one. So, yeah, we're kind of in some uncharted territory here with a total this low. But, you know, again, I mean, if you're going to have a total this low, these two teams certainly fit the bill here. So, you know, again, I mean, it's one of those things where in college, we just don't see totals like this. And quite frankly, we don't see totals like this in the NFL that much anymore either. So, you know, maybe a Thursday night game with a couple of really bad offenses, something like that. But, you know, again, it's just it's a big commentary on the state of affairs for both of these offenses here. And again, like you said, Brian, I mean, you're getting six with a home dog in a college game with a total of 37.5, and yet you're still kind of tempted to look at that NIU side. So I think that kind of says a lot about where Akron is. But, hey, at least they hired Chris Sabo as the baseball coach.
No, that's nice to see. I've always liked Chris Sabo as a player when he was with Cincinnati Reds. He's a hard-nosed player, sort of like that generation's Pete Rose. And it's good for him that they've got that over there. And he'll bring excitement to the program. You had mentioned Boston College. That's the only team that I could think of in the last decade or so where you saw low-scoring games because the Boston College offense was pathetic and their defense was very strong. Now, this year, Boston College is totally opposite. They can put points on the board, and they're not very good defensively. Just interesting how these teams turn around. You know, they go out and hire a defensive coordinator or a defensive coach because the defense is struggling, and then all of a sudden they can't get any offense. It's always been very interesting to me how teams do that, and they get the little cycles from an offense to defense, and they're still lousy all the time. And the good thing from the Cavaliers yesterday was they put up a lot of points. They actually won a game. That was one of the things I was looking at because they were going switching sports a little bit here, but they want to go a little bit younger, and they're going to run. You know, the NBA is all about running and gunning this year, and they got a lot of points on the board. So even though the Cavs are still going to stink, at least they'll be exciting.
Yeah, no, that's very true. First night, home opener revenge game because Atlanta beat them in the first home game for the Cavs post-LeBron. Hawks in a back-to-back. You know, Cavs, I mean, I don't know the dynamics there of Tyronn Lue being gone. I don't know how they feel about Larry Drew, but it has been an interesting week in Cleveland sports, and it seems like every week in Cleveland sports gets more and more interesting. The Cavs fire Tyronn Lue on Sunday. The Browns fire Hugh Jackson on Monday. I'm a little bit surprised Terry Francona wasn't fired on Tuesday just because of the way things seem to be going here in this city. But, man, you know, the Cavs rallied, and kudos to them for that. Now you look at this game on Sunday for the Browns, game 453-454, the Chiefs in town against Cleveland. Here's the thing. So being a Clevelander, you know, you and I both are, it would not shock me in the least if Cleveland pulled this ridiculous upset and was the first team to beat Kansas City, just because nothing ever seems to make sense in this town with everything that goes on. But you really do have to wonder here, you know, Hugh Jackson is a guy, and you can kind of see this on Hard Knocks, and yes, they do a lot of massaging with the editing, and they, you know, kind of glorify certain things and everything. But Hugh Jackson, it was clear that he was a good speaker. He was somebody that the team could gravitate towards a little bit. The problem was the guy just wasn't a very good football coach. And you know, you saw a little bit of that friction with him and Todd Haley early on in the process when they were talking about Josh Gordon's return and stuff like that. So this was clearly destined to fail. But the fact that this was now the tipping point for Hugh Jackson, really weird, especially going into a game here against the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah, it definitely was. And for them to keep the defensive coordinator and not only keep him, but promote him to the head coach for supposedly the rest of the season, it's just a shock to me. If you've watched any of the Hard Knocks, you could just tell the way the players reacted to the different coaches. Say what you want about Hugh Jackson. The players loved him. And, you know, even the Cavaliers, when Tyronn Lue was fired, they were all upset. It's something you have to take into account when you're handicapping these games, is how they're going to deal with the coaching changes and what's going to affect them. And you really don't know until they actually go out there and play. And we'll find out a lot about the Browns this week. Cleveland, I saw a tweet the other day, and Cleveland's up double-digit turnovers on the season. And they went back, and I can't remember who said it or what the exact numbers were, but if you were up 10 or more turnovers by this point in the schedule, you could just go back and look at how the teams did. I think Philadelphia was in that situation last year. They win the Super Bowl. Teams, when you're that good at getting turnovers, you're that lucky to get the turnovers, you're really good. Well, the Browns are up massively in turnovers this year, and they're not good. They're 2-4-1, 2-5-1 at this point. But it just tells you how lucky they have been to have the record they have. And now they're playing a Kansas City team. And when you play Kansas City, I think we've learned that, you know, people try to slow the game down, run the football, and the Kansas City Chief has even said he doesn't pay any attention to the run defense because he wants the opposition to run, and that's what the Browns are going to try to do. But you can't slow down this Kansas City offense, and the only way you got to do it is put points on the board. Will Cleveland be able to do that? With the line of 51.5, they're telling you that they think Cleveland will be able to move the ball here. We've seen Cleveland move the ball. We just can't see Cleveland putting the ball in the end zone for the most part, other than that overtime game against Oakland, who has one of the worst defenses in the NFL. And then they play Tampa last week, one of the worst defenses in the NFL. Against decent defenses, they've never scored more than 21 points. I won't be on Cleveland here, but when you take a look at Kansas City's schedule, you know, played Cincinnati, Denver, and then they play Cleveland. They do go on and play the NFC the next 2 weeks, including a game in Mexico against the Rams in 2 weeks. So they are going out of conference, so this may be a little bit more meaning to them. But, yeah, Cleveland, to me, is unbackable at this point. If it got over 10, got to be 11, okay, maybe I'll take a look at it, but I don't think that's going to come.
Yeah, that tweet from Warren Sharp here, and Warren Sharp is a must-follow, great NFL guy.
Yes.
In fact, he actually shared a link about Freddie Kitchens, the new offensive coordinator for Cleveland. That's certainly worth your time, I imagine. I haven't had a chance to check it out yet, but if it gets Warren Sharp's sign of approval, probably worth looking at here. The Browns, plus 11 in turnover margin with a 2-5-1 record, as Brian mentioned there. Since 2006, 38 teams with a plus 8 turnover margin or better through 8 weeks. Not one of them had a losing record except for the 2018 Cleveland Browns. So now you kind of wonder here, and it makes the Browns a little bit unpredictable, I think, because Freddie Kitchens, you know, just based on what Sharp was saying and what some of the comments were saying about that video, is much different from Todd Haley. And, you know, Todd Haley worked really well in Pittsburgh for a while until he just alienated everybody and they got rid of him. Never really got off on the right foot here with the Browns, I don't think. I don't know if maybe it was some kind of disconnect with Baker Mayfield, if he wanted Tyrod Taylor to be the guy, and then, you know, Baker got pushed in there by the injuries. I'm not entirely sure, but you know, you've got a guy with some arm talent in Baker Mayfield. You've got a team with some skill position talent. And you've got a defense that, you know, has at least forced turnovers. They've given up some big plays and things like that, but they have at least forced some turnovers here. I don't know. I think it's a very fascinating spot for Cleveland. I think I would probably look at the Cleveland side over the Kansas City side, just because I think for Kansas City here, everything's been a walk in the park. So, you know, you kind of expect this game to be, but that's also baked into the line a little bit here with Cleveland, you know, getting almost double digits at home. It's such a unique game, such a unique element. And also you kind of wonder here, how much does this game tell us about the Browns going forward? Because Kansas City, you know, New England and Kansas City are on another level in the AFC. Do we really find out a lot about Cleveland this weekend with the coaching change, with the turmoil, all that? I don't know. I don't think we do.
Yeah, you mentioned Haley. Back when spring ball started, Baker Mayfield never took any first-string snaps. There was no plan for him to even be playing. And then all of a sudden they got that Jets game where the quarterback goes out, game three of the season, and then the opposition is not prepared for him. He comes in and he does what he does. I mean, he's a talented quarterback when he can use his feet and run around. The problem is the Browns have not let him do any of that. And so when he's gotten into the other games, you know, the week after that when they had success against Oakland, but since then, you know, they scored 9 in regulation against Baltimore, 14 against the Chargers, 23 against Tampa, a weak defense, and just the offense has not done much, and it's unfortunate, but it's going to be a waste of season. To be honest with you, I wouldn't mind the Browns losing the rest of the season, getting better draft choices, because it's clear the Browns are not going to be going to the playoffs this year, and just don't get the quarterback hurt, and that's my main concern the rest of the year. Is I'd hate to see something happen to Baker Mayfield, because they have to play him. They've got nobody else. And then he gets hurt, and then here we go again. You know, we've seen decades of this back in Cleveland, so it's nothing new here. We're not living in Boston, where they have a championship every year in a different sport. So,
yeah, and of course that parade going on here today for the Boston Red Sox. So a pretty timely comment by you. And you know, I guess the last thing I'll say is you mentioned Baker Mayfield. I mean, the kid was under duress all game last week. He took several shots. That can't happen. I mean, I don't know if they have to do max protect or something like that. I know you want to run your offense, but also you got to keep this kid from getting killed. I mean, he is your future, and I think he has a pretty bright future at that, and I think he'll have an even brighter future when Lincoln Riley is his head coach next year. But again, you know, you really don't want to get that kid hurt with something that could linger into the future. So, you know, whatever they do offensively, yeah, you've got skill position guys to use, but it should be about max protect for Baker Mayfield. Let him go through his progressions. Let him start to read NFL defenses, and let him do so while standing upright and not picking himself up off the turf all game long. All right, let's go to game 461-462 here, Atlanta and Washington. Washington's anywhere from a pick at 5 dimes to a 1.5, 2-point favorite out there, couple of ones. This one's kind of scattered all over the place. But the important thing to note is that this line has mostly come down and has not gone up towards 3.
Yeah, there's a lot of people buying on Washington as of late. They did open 3 plus 115, I believe, is what I saw. But now looking at about 1.5, 2 here, I'd prefer the Washington side. Washington's been a team that has been under the radar. They look terrible. I believe they play, Monday night football game against New Orleans. They're coming out party. They lose that game 43-19, and that was on national TV. Obviously, the Washington Redskins, if you're not if they're not playing the Dallas or the Giants, chances are they're not going to be on TV. And that's what the public has gotten out of that game, is they stink against New Orleans. Well, they come back out and win the next 2 weeks against Carolina and Dallas, two pretty decent football teams. Now, they won them both on the road. But, then the Giants game last week, oh, my God, that's a bad football team. When you compare the Browns, the only team I could think of that's just as bad as the Browns, other than, well, who knows with Buffalo, but the Giants have been pitiful, and I can't believe Eli Manning's still going to start. It's crazy. But anyway, Washington's a team that has played pretty well in my estimations, and you're getting them at a bargain price. They continue to be undervalued here. They're underdogs, home underdogs to Carolina and Dallas, and then last week against the Giants in the pick'em range. So not a lot of people buying in on Washington, but I think they should be, as this team is really starting to play well. Atlanta, we all know about Atlanta's situation. They are coming off that bye week, and that's a nice advantage coming off of a bye week. So you got to give them that. But it was a short week going into the bye as they played the Giants on Monday Night Football. So it's one less day. But now they go on the road, play Washington, and then they get to go to play our Cleveland Browns. So Cleveland does play two really good offenses back-to-back here. But Atlanta's been able to move the ball, but they just haven't played any defense, and a lot of it has been the injuries to the Atlanta defense. Should be getting a little bit better on the season. But when you take a look at the defense from Atlanta, they're allowing 52.2% of their plays effectively, or excuse me, 52% of their successful plays defensively. That just can't happen. Washington on the other side is at 47.3, so they've been a little bit better. But as you want to take a look at, Atlanta just has not done well defensively. They are getting a few guys back, but they're to the point now that the Falcons are getting to be an afterthought. They get that win over Tampa, but they almost blew that one. I had Atlanta in that game. We needed a late score in that game, and they looked like they were dominating the game, but it didn't turn out that way. Plus two turnover margin. That's the one thing you can count on the Falcons. They have not lost a turnover margin in any game this season, unless they did against the Giants. I don't have that stat in front of me, but Washington's another team that doesn't turn the ball over very often. But I prefer the Washington side here at less than three. I think that's a team we can buy in on right now, and they're a little bit under the radar. I would, you know, the line's telling me right now that Atlanta's rated on a neutral about 1 point better than Washington. I would disagree on that. I'd take Washington here, although the Atlanta is off the bye, so you got to take that into account.
Atlanta was minus one in turnovers in that game against the Giants. They wound up losing a fumble in that one. So, you know, the thing about Atlanta, though, is that, you know, their red zone efficiency has gotten so much better here over the last few weeks. So maybe Steve Sarkisian kind of figured that whole thing out a little bit, and maybe that does benefit the Falcons some going forward. But, you know, as you said, I mean, Washington now, and also, too, with Washington, you know, getting more comfortable there with Jay Gruden and Alex Smith, you know, that pairing new here to start the season. The longer you get into the year, the more you get a feel for what a quarterback and coach combination is going to do. So it's a good game there in that one. I don't know if there's a whole lot of betting edges to be had, but I do think that should be a solid game on Sunday afternoon. Brian Leonard, professional handicapper over at wagertalk.com. What's going on over there right now, Brian?
Today being Wednesday, it's video day. We've got 12 different videos, I believe, we're doing today. A lot of the crew is in there. I don't know if anybody will be wearing any costumes. I'm kind of hoping that Kelly will wear something sleazy, but, you know, she'll never hear this, so I let's tell her that. But I'm sure the rest of the guys feel the same way. But, yeah, doing videos today and a lot of good information. Ralph Michaels, who was on the show last week, has been on fire, except for I guess he had a tough Saturday last week. Hey, it happens. It happens to the best of us. But Rolf's done a lot of work in college football, and he's a hell of a handicapper. College basketball right around the corner. I was with him last night. He's very excited about that. So a lot of good handicappers over at Wager Talk. A lot of good information. Stop on by, and no cost for the videos or anything like that. And hopefully we could teach you something.
Well, I hope you show up in costume. I mean, I don't know if you want to dress up like you're the new coach of the Browns or the new coach of the Cavs or – you know, maybe, I don't know, wear your bingo costume. Maybe that would be something that everybody would enjoy there on the videos. But definitely make sure you check out all the great work over there at wagertalk.com. And you can follow Brian on Twitter at BLeonardSports. Brian, appreciate the time as always, sir. Thank you very much. We'll talk to you again next week.
I appreciate it. And I can see everybody right now looking up on the internet what the hell bingo in the banana splits were. But I appreciate it. And we'll talk to you again next week.
Good stuff there, as always, with professional handicapper Brian Leonard from wagertalk.com. We got one more guest here for this Halloween edition of the show. That is Wes Reynolds. You know him from Twitter, at Wes Reynolds, the number one. Wes, how's it going today, man?
Adam, trick or treat, man.
I got to ask. I did this to Brian. I put him on the spot here at the top of today's segment. Start with something a little bit lighthearted since it's been a very stressful few days for me. Halloween costumes. What was your favorite one as a kid?
Oh, gosh. I'm trying to remember. I went in as a bunch of different things. I remember one time I went as Walter Payton. They had those little Hutch uniforms. I mean, these weren't like the authentic jerseys or anything, but they had those little Hutch uniforms where you could wear – you had the little football helmet with the one bar like the kickers used to have. And, you know – went went trick-or-treating at him, and ironically enough, and I feel bad about it now in light of recent events of a talk show host getting fired, but you know, I was a little boy and I got dressed and I had brown paint on it, so it was technically like blackface. Now keep in mind, this is like the mid-1980s. So, you know, obviously the times are different today than they were back then. So I went dressed up as Walter Payton. I think I was maybe 8 or 9 years old and had the full football uniform and everything.
Were you a pillowcase guy so you could carry more candy, or were you one of those with the jack-o'-lantern bucket?
I had the jack-o'-lantern bucket. I just thought it was a traditional thing to have, and that's what I used to give out candy to trick or treaters. And I mean, you know, just going through the different candy. I mean, you were obviously hoping to get like the actual candy bars, and you know, looking through, and when you would be disappointed when you'd see a lot of licorice, or you'd see a lot of Smarties, or you'd see a lot of Bitto Honeys, which are the worst candy ever because I had a crown on the back of my tooth as a kid, and those are obviously very hard to eat and very hard on your teeth, and bit into one of those, and it pulled my crown right off, and you know, clean off a tooth. So those are like the worst candy. So for people listening, if you're giving out candy to trick-or-treaters, you know, give out the good stuff. Give out the traditional candy bars and stuff like that. Don't be cheap about it. You know, give out the good stuff to the kids.
Give out the king-size candy bars, man. Contribute to how fat American children are getting. I guess, you know, that's kind of, you know, what today is all about. But no, honestly, I mean, you know, I always enjoyed Halloween as a kid. My mom actually made me a Bugs Bunny costume that I wound up wearing a couple of different times as a kid growing up. And I loved Looney Tunes, and shamefully, I kind of still do, despite all of the not-so-thinly-veiled racism and everything else that's in there. I've always loved the classic cartoons, and so... You know, I had the Bugs Bunny costume, and the sad part is now that my siblings, who were all quite a bit older than me at the time, they still make fun of me for it. So, you know, hey, whatever. I had the best costume in my neighborhood as far as I was concerned. So, all right, well, good luck to everybody out there passing out candy tonight, or if your kids are going out there, hopefully you've got good costumes for them to wear. Let's go ahead and talk here about college basketball first, Wes, because that starts next Tuesday night. I imagine you'll hit the ground running with that, as you do with all the sports markets, but you are a high volume guy. You're a derivative guy. We've talked about that here on the show. How in the hell do you do that when there are 100 games on the board?
I mean, it's really tough, and you probably have to pick your spots early because, I mean, we get all the reports out about, you know, these secret scrimmages that teams are doing. I mean, they're obviously not televised, and they're not, you know, the media really can't go watch them. You know, usually the coaches will answer questions, or, you know, if stuff leaks out to certain reporters. But I mean, at the end of the day, you don't really know how the teams are. And I mean, one of the things I was doing for the VSiN newsletter next week, because we put it out in the middle of the week, so we don't have lines currently, so we have to go kind of on projected lines to get picks on some high-profile games at least next week, you know, like Michigan State, Kansas, and Kentucky, Duke, and those games out next week, so we have to go on a projected line. But, you know, just looking at that, I mean, you kind of look and maybe you play against the hype. I mean, something like I guess a good example I can use, and I have no idea what the price is going to be, but if you look at something like BYU at Nevada, you got people betting Nevada like they're a Final Four contender, and they're transfer you, and they certainly have a lot of talent, but you've got, you know, a lot of hype around that team. I mean, there are certain shops with them at single digits to win the national championship. So, I mean, a game like that, do you play against the hype with a program like BYU that's been a pretty consistently good program for a long time? So, you know, do you kind of play against the hype there? And, I mean, in terms of derivatives, it's a little bit harder in college basketball, number one, because there's so many games and there's so many teams to look at. And it's impossible that first week to kind of really, I mean, you can look at box scores, you can look at stats, but it's really impossible to get a good look at teams, you know, all in that first, this early part of November. So, I mean, you got to be a little bit careful with it, and I'm certainly going to try to do that myself.
So from a second half wagering standpoint here, I mean, what are you looking for at that point in time? Because, you know, I know that you do like to do a lot of first half. You'll play the first half under, full game under, maybe look for that middle, or at least try to assure yourself of a 2-1 on that particular game. So in terms of second halves, I mean, you know, obviously you can't watch all these games. If you can be watching a game, you know, or kind of picture in picture or something like that, kind of see how the game flow is going, obviously pay attention to foul trouble. That's a big help, but you know, you've got a small window here. And if you've got, you know, just to make the math simple, 30 games at 7, 30 games at 8, 30 games at 9, another 20 at 10, you know, you only have that, you know, 10 to 15 minute window of those second half numbers being up. So what is it that you're looking for in that regard?
I guess, I mean, just different patterns. And you really probably can't do it the first and the second game. I mean, you're probably looking at just basically your straight bets on totals and sides for the most part, at least. But one of the things early on, you know, we've seen in past recent college basketball seasons where some of the scores you might get really early in the year are just stupid, where you get these high-scoring games. And we've seen it a little bit. We've seen it in the NBA, too, because the refs, you know, they always have that point of emphasis that we're going to do the freedom of movement, that we're gonna call these hand-checking fouls, that we're going to, you know, really have the point of emphasis. And when they have those points of emphasis, those usually come in early in the season. And then, you know, kind of maybe once you get in the conference play, it seems to go back to normal and the markets adjust and the odds makers adjust their prices for that. So, I mean, that's something a little bit early. Maybe you're looking to play overs a little bit more than unders simply because of not only the excess fouls that are called, but also some of these teams, unless they're an experienced team like Virginia, you know, who are good defensively, and then obviously with their pace of play and style of play. But a lot of these teams with some of these young hotshot freshmen, they don't get it yet on defense. So sometimes that's why you see higher scores early rather than later in the season.
Well, of course, as we talked about with Kyle Hunter on Monday, and as I'm sure you're paying attention to, and as you'll dig into here maybe a little bit more as we get closer to the season, you can find a lot of value on those new head coaches, tempo changes, things of that stuff that, you know, those are things that it's going to take a little while for the market to catch up. I mean, we may end up seeing some totals moves for Tuesday of, you know, 8 to 10 points probably, and I'm sure we'll see some noteworthy side moves as well. But again, everybody trying to figure this stuff out. So if you've done a lot of preseason research for college basketball, and obviously we don't do it to the same degree that we do for college football on the show or at bangthebook.com. But if you've done a lot of research, trust it. Trust in what you've done. Believe in what you've done, because everybody's trying to figure out these teams at the same time. So Wes, I guess the last thing I'll ask you here about college basketball, then we'll get into the NBA for a few minutes, is, you know, you're an Indianapolis guy, you're a Hoosiers fan, now you're out in Las Vegas, though, so you'll have easy access to the Mountain West, you'll probably watch more Pac-12, stuff like that. Do you adhere to, or do you subscribe to, I guess I should say, the whole idea of conference specialization? Do you feel like you know some of these leagues a lot better than you know others?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're not going to know all, I believe there's 32 conferences in college basketball. I mean, don't quote me on that, but I think it's 32. And, I mean, it's impossible to know everything equally. Like, obviously, I'm not going to know as much about the MEAC or the SWAC as I do the Big Ten. And keep in mind that, you know, a dozen or so of these conferences aren't really on the board unless the teams are playing a team from a Power Five or something like that, or unless once you get in the conference tournament time, when every single conference is on board. So, I mean, you know, I think there's something to conference specialization, but, you know, I think it's good to get a good grasp of the national scene of what you follow. I don't think you have to exclusively, I guess, limit yourself to one conference. Now, you may have more games if you're a guy in the South. You may have more SEC or ACC or you know, Southern Conference type of games. You know, if you're a West Coast guy, you know, maybe you know the Pac-12, the Big West, the Big Sky, the Mountain West, the WCC a lot better. But, I mean, I don't think you necessarily have to exclusively concentrate on one conference. But in terms of, you know, as you go along and watch more games in the season, I think maybe it's a lot easier to spread out a little bit and play a wide variety of games on the board. I mean, because it's so early now, and you have to, you know, just kind of maybe, you know, you could probably only concentrate on so many teams at least early on. So I think there's something to specialization.
Well, we'll definitely touch on some of those topics next week after we see, you know, what kind of happens on opening night there a little bit. And again, it's going to take some time for these teams to gel. I mean, you know, when you talk about football, I mean, you've got 11 on 11, you've got 11 guys that have different assignments, stuff like that. Basketball, it's only five guys, and they're out there for, you know, 10 to 12 minutes together at a time, sometimes more than that in the NBA. So, you know, it is something where I think it's very important to develop that chemistry, develop that kind of rhythm. And again, you know, that may be something that kind of factors in here, especially if you've got teams with a lot of turnover, without veteran players, stuff like that. So a lot of angles to consider when it comes to college basketball. The hard part is, you know, trying to consider them for as many teams as there are out there. So, Wes, let's chat NBA for a couple of minutes here. We got a 7-game card tonight, handful of decent matchups. Utah-Minnesota is a good one. Indiana-New York, I previewed over at bangthebook.com. The Lakers only laying 7.5 against Dallas, which is kind of interesting. But anything you've seen here so far in the NBA season, anything that's worked really well from a derivative standpoint?
Well, I mean, certain teams, I mean, I think, you know, I'm still kind of trying to figure the NBA out. I'm about around 500 early, you know, kind of trading back and forth. Well, have a good night and then not have a not so good night and then a good night and then a not so good night. And I mean, you know, I think it's still early on. And I mean, you know, you're trying to figure out which teams are off to a hot starter for real. Like, I think Milwaukee is pretty for real. I mean, they've shown me enough that, you know, this team might be a real dark horse contender in the Eastern Conference. They're still not the favorite. I mean, Boston and Toronto and probably Philadelphia still have shorter odds than them. But, you know, Milwaukee is for real. But you look at Houston last night, getting blown out by Portland on a back-to-back. And Houston has started off horribly. Now, you would think they're going to get it right because they have so much talent, but it's going to take time for those guys to really, you know, to really play together. And, I mean, some of the teams have started out hot. Golden State, you know, clearly is 7-1, you know. And just looking at these, I mean, I'm trying to really pinpoint something, I guess, that from a derivative standpoint, it's still so early that I don't have a lot of patterns. But, you know, I like to sometimes try some underdogs in the first half. That hasn't worked so far for me in this short season. You've been seeing a lot of these favorites really, I think, get out to good starts. But, you know, and so much of it is just that some teams that start out really well are not going to end up that great. I mean, you never know. You could be proven wrong. But, I mean, for Menno to be 5-3 right now. And I actually thought they were in a little bit of a tricky spot against Orlando off of back-to-back because they beat what is seen as the better team in Florida, Miami, even though they're not that great. And then going to Orlando, you think, okay, they're playing the worst team that's maybe a little bit closer to them. And then they pull away and win late. So, you know, it's still a little hard. And we've talked about this before. You know, I think you probably need around 20 games or so to kind of see, okay, what is this team really? You know, is this team going to be very good or is this team going to be what we expected them to be or even worse? Looking at San Antonio, I didn't think they'd be 4-2, and they've kind of won a lot of lucky games late. So, I mean, you don't know how good some of these teams are yet.
I think it's really interesting that, you know, you've got a team like the Hawks who I think overall the Hawks have played pretty well for the most part. I mean, given the composition of that roster, given the talent that they have, they've been in quite a few games. They've gotten a couple of wins, but they're really jacking up the pace here this year. Pelicans playing much quicker. And again, these will kind of regress a little bit as we get larger sample sizes and things of that sort. But, you know, I think, you know, you also look at the Milwaukee Bucks. They're fourth in pace, according to Basketball Reference. And, you know, they're 7-0 here so far on the year. It's always interesting to me to see how teams start out and then how they gradually regress back into a lot of the same things that they used to do. Now, of course, for Atlanta, you've got a coaching change with Lloyd Pierce. So maybe they don't regress back to playing, you know, at a similar tempo to last year. just inside the top 10. This year, they're leading and they're shooting more threes here as well. But, you know, it's always interesting to see how those teams set up and then also see if those are sustainable developments. I mean, again, you know, we only have teams that have played 7 or 8 games here so far this year. A lot of regression to the mean coming here. And I know that we talk about, you know, basketball maybe being a sport where you want to look more at the last 5 or the last 10 as opposed to baseball, which is more of a full body of work kind of thing. But still, you know, early on in the season, a lot of perceptions can be really skewed. And this is something that I've been watching very closely here to see how teams kind of fall back into either what they've done previously or what their expected talent level actually is.
Sure. And I mean, I guess an example of that is going to be Utah, who I think is trying to make a more concerted effort to play with a little bit better pace. I mean, they were one of the slower paced teams in the league, but I think eventually, and I think it'll end up being above last year, but eventually, I mean, their identity is defense. And I think that identity is going to stay the same. Now, they may not play as many games in the 80s. You know, they may be in the high 90s. But, you know, some of these Jazz totals, I think, eventually are going to go down. I mean tonight, I mean, a Jazz total is 222.5 with Minnesota. And, I mean, those totals last year might have been like 210. So, eventually you're going to see, like you were saying, some regression and maybe kind of going back into what your identity is. And plus, this is so early in the season that coaches are trying to kind of see their rotation. So they're going to experiment a little bit more early in the season than they're going to come, you know, January or something like that. So these teams, for the most part at least, are going to be completely different.
Yeah, and it's one of those things. Something that's always interesting to me about the NBA as well, especially because I'm such an analytics guy when it comes to baseball, and I'm starting to get into them a little bit more with hockey. You know, the NBA is kind of becoming that copycat league as well to some degree, where, you know, teams are kind of realizing that there's not a whole lot of equity in the mid-range game. You want to play high percentage shots around the rim, and you probably want to chuck it away from deep, you know, like the Houston Rockets have been doing, and obviously they're kind of at the forefront there when it comes to you know, NBA analytics and stuff like that. But that's always intriguing to me too. And seeing how the odds makers adjust to the different, you know, atmospheres in the NBA. And I think that now we've kind of gotten to a point where, you know, we were talking about very high totals. We were talking about line moves on totals earlier on in the season. It seems like that market has really settled in. And that's something where you got to give the odds makers a lot of credit, because they adjust in a very timely manner, and you just hope that as a bettor, you could do the same thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, one of the things too, I was hearing on local radio yesterday, and Jeff Sherman over at Westgate Superbook USA, who follows NBA pretty closely, that's kind of one of the sports he specializes as an odds maker over there. I mean, that's his sport and his duty to do those lines. And he was talking specifically about the prop market and how they have to offer a little bit less props than they have in previous years, because you've had early on in the season, you have had teams rest guys. I mean, you know, we're not, you know, it's not like we're, okay, we're a week or two before the All-Star break and we're playing a maybe more nondescript opponent, so we got to rest somebody. I mean, we've seen Kawhi Leonard already rest games. We've seen other players, all star players, also rest games. So it's tough to offer these player props on some of these primetime games, you know, and that's when they usually do these props for. I mean, they're usually doing them for TNT, PN, ABC, maybe an NBA TV game. But, you know, so they're not doing it for a nondescript Memphis Sacramento game on a Tuesday night. That's just on your regional sports television networks. But, you know, it's been a little bit hard to maybe offer that menu, because, you know, all of a sudden you offer it and then they announce, you know, and then that breaks on Twitter that, hey, Kawhi Leonard's going to sit or so-and-so is going to sit. I mean, you know, it's part and parcel in previous years with, like, the Spurs, because they would always do that. But now you're seeing other teams do it. It's a copycat league in a lot of ways. I mean, You're seeing other teams rest players that wouldn't have ordinarily done so. You're seeing other teams, I think, kind of try to play the pace and space game that the Warriors and the Rockets and those teams type of play. So, I mean, you know, it is still a learning process, and you're still learning, and you have to watch and keep up to date on the news to try to maybe, if stuff is still on the board, to try to beat the odds makers to it. But the odds makers are following the same thing that you are. That's why, you know, I always laugh when I hear, you know, some of maybe the service advisory or tout ads about, it's all about information. I mean, that was always the tagline in the 80s, right? You know, we've got the inside information. We've got the information you need to beat your man and get a winner. I mean, if you're still using that today, then you should really get out of that business, because everybody has the same information. Everybody has the ability to have a social media account. Everybody has the internet. Information travels really quick, and maybe there's still that small window where you can try to use it to your advantage, but that window closes really quickly.
All right, let's talk golf for a few minutes here, because this tournament here this weekend coming up at TPC Summerlin, we had a good chat with Brian Blessing about it yesterday, who has played that course multiple times and had some very interesting thoughts on the tournament. So I want to get your thoughts as well here, as this one's now kind of in your backyard also, since you live out there in Sin City. What do you think about this one? I mean, we've got a much stronger field here with Ricky Fowler, Jordan Spieth, Bryson DeChambeau. It's a much stronger field than we've had in the past. So to me, I think the true function of that is to put some is to give some players that have a good chance to win even higher futures odds.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I looked over at Westgate, which really, if you come out here and you bet a golf feature, they really have the best and fairest golf odds in town. And they had, you know, now it's a co-favorite with him and Fowler, but they had Tony Finau as the favorite. And I wasn't really surprised by that, because considering his form, considering he really probably should have won last week, he had that tournament under control for the most part and then just couldn't finish it off. But you look at that and you know that this guy has a lot of talent. You know he's been consistent and he finished pretty well in most, if not all, the majors. But then you saw him at 10-1 and it's like, wow. When you look at it, this guy has won one career PGA Tour event, and it was the alternate event at the Puerto Rico Open when it was alternate one of the WGC events. And you're like, you're seeing him and he's like, he's 10-1? Wow. So you're looking at that and you're looking at the fact they have five Ryder Cuppers here with Fowler, Spieth, DeChambeau, Finau, and Simpson. So this is a stronger field than you usually get. And Kuchar, a longtime former Ryder Cupper who is an assistant captain, is also in the field. So, I mean, it is good not only for the tournament, because at this time of year, even when you're Las Vegas, with everything that Las Vegas can have to offer, you know, a PGA Tour player for entertainment and whatnot, it's tough to get guys this time of year to play in a regular wraparound season PGA Tour event. And, you know, credit to the organizers for being able to get the field that they got.
All right, so who do you like this week? I mean, you know, you've got some guys here that, again, like I said, are going to put some better prices out there for some of the mid-range types of dudes. And as we mentioned on yesterday's show, 11 of the last 16 winners here at TPC Summerlin for this event have been first-time winners. So is that kind of the angle that you look to play? Are you taking a lot of shots in that 40 to 60 range?
Yeah, I mean, this is a tournament where you don't want to be afraid to play bombs here. I mean, you've had some shorter prices last year. Patrick Cantlay won at 20-1, but that was a wide open, and don't use last year's results so much because the wind was really howling out here that week. And it's been a little bit windy this week, not overwhelmingly windy, but enough where it could affect. But I mean, the winning score last year was 9-under. Usually you got to be about 20 under par to be in contention going to the final holes on Sunday at this course, because this course is pretty gettable. But yeah, I looked at the first guy I actually looked at, he's my shortest choice at 41, was Bo Hosler, who was a rookie this year, had two cracks at a win, couldn't finish the deal, lost in that playoff in Houston to Ian Poulter, also finished second at the Travelers. He actually, excuse me, played here last year. He was the 54-hole co-leader here before he finished seventh. Like I said, the win kind of wreaked havoc on the leaderboard, and the guys that were leading kind of fell down. And then Patrick Cantlay was able to kind of, you know, negotiate the win and ended up winning in a playoff last year. But, you know, some encouraging signs for Bo Hosler. Southern California guy, so he plays well on the West Coast. Shot 66 in the final round in South Korea at Nine Bridges a couple weeks ago. And then before that, also had rounds of 65 and 66. So, you know, he looks like he's kind of peaking a little bit at the right time, has the ability to go low. This is a course that, and that's why I don't like to take a lot of the short favorites here, because, you know, there's a lot of guys that can go on birdie runs on the PGA Tour. They wouldn't be on the PGA Tour. So, I mean, I think this is open, and you can see guys that maybe don't jump out at you right away. And, you know, Hosler, I think, is really close to getting a win. He's a talented guy. So he was a guy I went with. And also Sam Burns, who's another young guy, 22-year-old out of LSU, was third last week at the Sanderson Farms, which was the alternate event to the WGC event in China. So he played solid here last year, finished 20th. People probably know Sam Burns best because he was the playing partner of Tiger Woods in that final round at the Honda Classic, where both guys were in contention, and that was like the first time that really Tiger had been in contention, where it's like, oh man, he has a chance to win again, before he lost by a shot to Paul Casey. So that's where I think they know Burns from. But you know, you can get him from anywhere 50 to 60 to 1. And, you know, another guy that could be a first-time winner here.
Wes Reynolds, who's working, you can follow on Twitter, at Wes Reynolds, the number one. Appreciate your time, as always, sir. Thank you so much for joining me. We'll talk to you again later on.
You bet, Adam. Happy Halloween, everybody.
Good thoughts there with Wes Reynolds, again, at Wes Reynolds and the number one. Should be good to talk with him as the season goes along here about some of those college basketball derivatives and some of the different betting opportunities available with those. Coming up on our Thursday edition of Bang the Book Radio, we'll be joined by Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. Lots of college football coming your way in that segment. And then Tony George from Doc Sports will join us. We'll do some NBA and some NFL there with him. Then Friday, Westgate Super Contest Selection segment. And Brent from DSI Sportsbook with this week's version of the Odds Report. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. And I will talk to you again tomorrow.